Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We are at it again. We are at the Unimpressed Podcast because I'm very unimpressed about everything and anything. And I'm unimpressed that Matt is not working with Annie Leibovitz already in his career. So Annie Leibovitz was a big-time photographer that I had the pleasure of meeting years ago. She had some financial problems. And the guy I was working with at the time was a UBS banker. And he put a deal together and bailed her out and gave her some money.
Wow. She was somebody I looked up to when I first started out.
What was unique about Annie Leibovitz that, don't get me wrong, Matt is our in-house production guy. He's a photographer, entrepreneur. He's a videographer. And I found him when he was doing photos at a show in Fayetteville, North Carolina, we did with Southern Mom and Them Tour.
Yeah.
I just want to give you a little background before we go into this Annie Leibovitz story. What was, with all these things Matt done, we'll get into his career a little more. What was something that made you like an Annie Leibovitz? Was there something that was unique about her photos?
Yeah.
What was recognizable?
Just her portraits, like the way she, her thought process was going into a portrait, and her just visualizing everything, and it just made for some like iconic. Iconic photos and portraits, like very intimate portraits on people.
You're saying intimate, like you noticed intimacy?
There was like some sort of intimacy between her and her portraiture.
And how do you recognize that? Like what looks, like compared to another photographer, like what makes a photographer stand out from your perspective, being a photographer yourself?
I mean, there's a lot of things, but going back to the Annie thing real quick, something about her portraiture or whatever, like, there was some feeling that you could feel from those portraits opposed to like starting out. I mean, I saw tons of photographers or whatever, and they're just like the most generic, just pose, like hand on hip type stuff like that. And it was really no thought put into it, but like Annie's vision with backgrounds and lighting settings and stuff like that. And then getting your subject to kind of like be comfortable with themselves and then capture that through a photograph.
So we're talking about, things that people look at to notice a great photographer. Mm. And you were talking about Annie Leibovitz having intimacy with her subject.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
When you're shooting something like that and you're trying to pull off intimacy, how do you make that happen?
Just getting comfortable with your subject. I mean, I'm the number one most self-conscious person in front of cameras, so this is like insane. But as far as like, I mean, I feel that that's the same way with a lot of people, like shooting photos of them. They kind of put this guard up and they kind of like don't want to open up. They just want to be like perceived as a certain way or whatever. So it's really getting to know your subject and spending 30, 40 minutes, whatever, just talking and getting to know their background and asking like like kind of getting get their guard down, whatever, but kind of always keep your camera on you so they're like aware of it, but they're not. They're more focused on just like getting calm and relaxed. So when you go to shoot, it's not so serious. It's just kind of like take your subject out, whatever, and then catch those moments where they're like actually laughing, like telling somebody to laugh, like opposed to like them actually laughing. Like you can tell the difference in a photograph, what's real and what's not.
So you were saying you get better photos. You get better photos of someone when they're more relaxed around you.
100%. I mean, that's what goes into a lot of photo shoots. That's my whole thing is just to capture their real self. I think those are more long lasting. They mean more to the person because it's kind of letting their guard down, and it perceives that through a photograph, and other people can feel that energy through it.
Well, the first time I met Matt, we had this show in Fayetteville, North Carolina, with Darren, and he came and shot photos of the show, and I don't know. I recognized it very quick. I thought these are great photos. I said, "How the hell is this guy in Fayetteville, North Carolina, shooting photos?" You know, and I was like, "Let me follow up with this guy," because you don't find, especially when you shoot a photo when it's natural lighting and being able to pull that off and get a great shot. That's, you know, I think that takes a talent do that. So, what is the deal about catching the right lighting and natural light when you shoot a photo and at a live event like that?
I mean, they're being thrown in like different scenarios or not. When you got to think on the spot and brainstorm and look around lighting scenario wise, like how am I going to be able to pull this off? Like if I don't have all this like bunch of equipment with me, like it's up to me to be able to work this out. But I mean, it's looking at your environment, where lighting is coming from and all this other stuff. I didn't know I was going to meet you that night.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was going to shoot that show. And then they had mentioned probably 20 minutes beforehand that you want me to shoot some photos of Darren and stuff like that. And I was like, I have no lighting equipment, no nothing. How am I going to pull this off and make it look good? And I had this little pop-up flash, whatever, and I just ran with that. And
when you look at light, how do you visualize light? You know, you visualize light. So you're saying, I know what this little light will do. I know this lighting is good right here. If I go this angle or whatever, is that kind of like the adjustments to get a good shot?
Yeah, for sure. And it's just an experience too. I mean, I worked for a magazine a long time and they never really gave me direction and stuff like that. And I kind of went into the magazine. I mean, I didn't really know much. And then, so it was like every assignment I went on to, it was a learning experience. And just from working there, I ended up meeting very, very fortunate to meet my best friend, Raul, whatever. And then he kind of invited me in and showed me his whole studio set up and taught me so much. And along with other photographers like that, they kind of guided me in certain ways, but it was all through experience, like working for the magazine and not knowing what kind of scenario I was going to be put in and having to figure it out. I mean, at the end of the day, it was my job. And I was like, I need to figure out this complicated situation with terrible lighting or whatever else is going on. It's a lot of thought process that goes into it when you walk into a scenario. Like even the thing with Darren, it's like, I had never met Darren. And I was like, and I know I'm probably going to have maybe 2 minutes to meet him, whatever. And like, fortunately he's a funny comedian and he's real open and active and whatever. Like, but I didn't really have to have that time set apart to get to know him first to capture at least something I thought was.
Cause you didn't know the personality. You're coming in kind of cold.
Yeah.
Right. I get that. Coming in cold, but the shots were still good. Still great. I think that's why you're here today. I mean, if they weren't worth a damn, hell, I would never called you back.
I appreciate you did.
And then one thing led from there. I think the first thing I did is like, you want to go to Nashville.
Yeah.
And then I took you to Nashville and you shot, Carol Ann and Gerard mm-hmm. at Zanies. And then one thing led to another, and here you are. Now you're living in my basement. I say my basement, but really it's a two-bedroom apartment studio that we've tricked out.
It's a house inside a house.
It's a house inside a house, and it's got its own entrance and everything. So, and this is the Unimpressed podcast right here in the building.
Yep.
So talking about Youngstown, you're originally from Youngstown, Ohio. You came to North Carolina when? With your parents, right? With your parents, sister, older brother?
The younger brother.
Younger brother.
Yeah, they're both twins.
That's right. They're both younger, but they're twins. That's right.
Yeah, me and my brother are a lot alike. But yeah, I moved here. I worked a bunch of jobs, whatever. We were in a town, Youngstown. It wasn't it was kind of a poor city, whatever. But yeah, there was just no job opportunity anywhere. And my mom was going to school at the time. I remember my mom and dad came down here, whatever, and had a job convention thing, whatever, looking for teaching jobs. And we were originally supposed to move to Wilmington, but we moved to Fayetteville. But that was the beginning of my senior year of high school. So, I mean, I was not the happiest person. I gave my parents a very hard time about it because I was like, you're moving me away from all my high school friends that I knew my whole life to something I've never experienced. And plus, I'm going to go through school not knowing anybody. It turned out to be the best decision they could have made for me. Like, looking back on it, as much of a hard time as I gave them, is I'm very fortunate to get out of my hometown and go to.
It's cold as shit in Ohio, too.
Oh, yeah.
Cold as hell. I don't know if I would want to live up there. I love Cleveland. Cleveland was pretty cool, but
yeah,
you could tell we were there when it wasn't that cold, but you could tell when it's in the dead winter.
Oh, that's a different time.
It's cold as shit.
It's a different type of cold.
Probably blessed you by getting you out of there, so you had to do all those winters. You probably look a lot older.
Yeah.
If you still lived up there, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe North Carolina keeps me young.
Keeps you a little younger, right? Matt looks like a 12-year-old kid. I mean, he's, you know.
Stuck with it.
Yeah. You know, got the hair slicked back and everything else.
Yep. Going back to the snow real quick, that's how I made my money when I was like 12, 13 years old. I used to take a snow blower down the road or whatever, walk out to people's doors, knock on the doors, be like, can I snow blow your driveway or whatever, and come home with like $50. But like, as a 13-year-old or 14-year-old kid, like $50 is a lot.
That's pretty cool. How many yards would you do at a time?
It was like 10.
Or driveways.
10, whatever. But I mowed grass and stuff like that. My dad kind of taught me that to.
Now, were you an artist in school? Did you have any artistic things that kind of shine through?
I mean, art class was always my favorite. Just like creating stuff and stuff like that. Yeah, that was always like one of my favorite things. I sucked at math. Math was my worst subject. But art was always something I was always interested in.
And when did that translate to photography? Like, this is something that I like to do, is taking photos. When did that epiphany moment happen where you realized that, hey, I like shooting photos?
Yeah. When I was super young, like 10, 11 years old, those little disposable cameras you would wind up or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember just doing kind of weird creative stuff with that. And I grew up skateboarding. So skateboarding was, I was like, this is a reason to pick up a camera or whatever and shoot photos of my friends or whatnot. Met a guy, whatever. He showed me these really cool, like, junkyard photos. He's like real rustic, kind of artsy photos and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I could take photos of other things like that. And then I just wanted to meet people and whatnot and get to know them on a real personal, like, personal level. And that's what I enjoyed most about it. And I was like, I moved the photography in with that and was able to kind of break people's guards down and meet a ton of people through it.
And then you just kept doing it from there.
That became like my main focus. Yeah.
Gotcha. Shooting photos. Now that you're shooting a lot of video with us, is there a different thought process or is it the same thought process shooting video with us now and doing learning that craft, like being a DP and so forth?
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I mean, from photography to video is totally different, but yeah, the same thing as photography is just getting raw, real reactions out of people instead of just fake whatever they know. They're getting their guard down and let them be themselves.
Very relatable stuff, like just, hey, I'm here, take the photo, take the video. In those moments do shine through, obviously, through, you know, on camera, whether it's video or stills.
Yeah.
They really do shine through. Were you 100% self-taught?
I wouldn't say 100% self-taught. I was self-taught. I self-taught myself a lot when I was a debt collector for 8 years, or whatever. And one day at the bank, I just remember taping camera settings to the side of my monitor and just sitting at the bank, literally watching like photography tutorials or whatever. And then I would get off of work and then I would just watch tutorials and learn as much as I could because I knew one day I wanted to bounce out of it and I wanted to do this full time.
From collections to photography.
Yeah. Yeah, being self-taught.
Being self-taught is if some kid was coming up today,
yeah,
and wanted to be a photographer and that was their passion, what would you tell them?
Just learn as much as you can. Don't be so defensive. Don't be so defensive and learn from people that are greater than you. I mean, that was my biggest thing, and I mean, I self-taught myself a lot of the knowledge part of it, but like I said, Raul took me under his wing, taught me a million things I would have never known in my life. And it's like, the thing with him, he would approach photographers like that. He would want to teach or whatever. And they were like, well, no, this is my thing. Whatever. Don't step in my, people shoot outside his studio or whatever. And he'd walk out, be friendly or whatever. And they'd kind of just back off and be like, well, I'm allowed to shoot here. You know that, right? It's like, he's trying to help, but a lot of people just have a defensive mentality where they don't want to learn from anybody else. They feel like it's their own little baby or something like that, but they don't want to learn from other people. That's how you grow. That's how you grow.
And I met Raul on Catfish Cooley's music video shoot.
Yeah.
He thought I was a little crazy, but he's a good photographer too. He did a good job with your pictures.
Yeah.
And he had a pretty interesting to be in Fayetteville, because I was like, how the hell are these guys in Fayetteville, North Carolina? You know, it's like, because I was in New York for 12 years, just came to Charleston, South Carolina, and I saw tons of photographers.
Yeah.
You know, tons and tons and tons. And there's not a lot of great ones out there. Yeah. And then I see these two guys that work together that are great photographers in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Yeah. So it's like a diamond in the rough type thing. But he has an interesting story where he shot the Emmys. Is that correct?
That's right. Head photographer of the Emmys. He had a little studio set up outside before they went all the paparazzi stuff like that. He's got a bunch of Emmy stories.
Really? How many years did he do that? Or did he just do it, get picked to do it the 1 year?
I can't remember how many years off top.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll pick like a guy that they like for that year.
Yeah.
And then they bring in another creative the following year.
Yeah.
A lot of times they do it like that, you know, just to kind of switch it up.
Right.
To get a different look, depending on who it was and so forth.
Yeah, and his dad's kind of a legend, too. He's got
Really?
Yeah.
What's his dad? Who's his dad?
He was a photographer, Raul as well. But yeah, he was, he worked for the Miami Herald for a long time. And he had shot this photo overseas. And it was a little girl on the back of a bus. But you were not allowed to shoot there because the army was so strict. And he went ahead and shot the photo anyways and was held captive in the country and whatever. It's a phenomenal photo. But, yeah, one photo, press photo of the world, I think the world or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
really? So he got some accolades for a photo for a newspaper.
Yeah.
Huh. Nice. Nice. Well, that's interesting. It must have been meant to be if y'all hooked up in Fayetteville, North Carolina, because there's not a lot going on in Fayetteville.
Yeah. But aside from that, too, aside from Raul, there was two photojournalists, Andrew Kraft and Melissa Garrett, that worked for the Fayetteville Observer, and they're phenomenal photojournalists, like as far as capturing people's emotions and stuff like that. I saw photographers would see them out on shoots and stuff like that and feel intimidated, so they would never approach them or whatever, and I admired their work, and I still admire their work. They're phenomenal people. Got to be friends with them or whatever, and I could ask them for advice, and they'd be happy to help.
So when you got out of collections, you went to work for the city newspaper, mm-hmm. right? What's called City View?
A magazine called City View. At the bank, I was freelancing for them at the time, and I did that for about a year. I was working in a town, a city called Raleigh, so I was driving an hour to work, hour back, and then I would freelance for the magazine till maybe 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, edit the photos, wake back up at 4 o'clock in the morning, repeat the same thing over and over again. And it just got to the point where I was tired of working at a bank, tired of working at a corporate job. And it was something I was not interested in. So, yeah, I just made the decision. I walked out into a park one day and made the decision. I was like, I'm going to take this risk. I hope it works out or whatever. I had a lot of faith in it. And
like old Catfish Cooley, he took a jump. You got to take a jump. You don't know till you try.
Yeah.
You know, you never know until you try. That's a big deal.
The thing is, I just didn't want to. I think it was the right timing because I didn't want to just jump from a moving train to nothing. It's like I already had the freelance thing going on with the magazine. I felt like it was the right time to do it.
And then I stole him away.
There I am.
I stole him away from City View.
Yep.
I stole him away, and I think it's going to work out well. We've got a lot of good things going on. I mean, it's kind of unique to. Yesterday, I was trying to get my daughter to do some photos, and she said it was too late in the day, but it's kind of unique to say, hey, Matt, you want to take some photos of my daughter, you know, and help her out because she's very photogenic and wants to model. And well, she did model for years, and now she's wanting to get back into it. So that's pretty cool. So you're working for City View,
mm-hmm.
And then we're circling back to where I met you at the they call it a Fayetteville Auditorium or
Crown Coliseum.
Crown Coliseum.
Yep.
Now you have some stories there that are kind of interesting, and it kind of gives paints a picture of, you know, what may go on behind the scenes at concerts and so forth. Yep. And you had one story with J. Cole that you kind of maneuvered your way in to get some photos of some other guys too. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, the J. Cole story came through the magazine or whatever. The editor that Crown Coliseum had a hip photographer, and I don't know what happened to it, but the magazine hit me up last minute and was like, are you interested in going to shoot J. Cole tonight? It's his homecoming show. It was, absolutely. I love music. I've always loved music. And I was like, this is my way into being a photographer at a big concert. And I was like, this is cool. Met the whole Crown Coliseum staff. And right before the show started, they were like, well, we need a group photo with J. Cole. And I was like, this is something I've never experienced before. So this is surreal to me. And I'm looking around, HBO's there or whatever. So I'm like realizing this is a big deal. So they take me back there, whatever. They're like, just don't ask J. Cole for a selfie or anything like that. I was like, I didn't care. End up shooting the photo of J. Cole, whatever. Didn't say a word to him. And then we went walking out and I felt a tug on the back of my shirt. And I turned around. I was J. Cole. And he was like, hey, man, you didn't speak to me. I was going to tell you, hey, and thanks for coming to shoot the photos. I was like, so humble. I was.
And he's a Fayetteville, North Carolina guy. Mm-hmm. He's originally from J. Cole's originally from Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Do you know his story about how he got out of there as well?
I know a little bit of it. I remember him. He left Fayetteville and went to New York and sat outside. Don't quote me on it, but it was J. Cole's studio, or not J. Cole, Jay-Z's studio. Mm-hmm. And sat there for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I think he had finally met him or whatever. But then there was a long story after that, but they crossed paths and they connected or whatever. And
now he had some friends. He had some friends show up that night too, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
I'm talking about other acts. When there's some other acts
At the show.
Yeah, at the show.
Yeah, it was a surprise homecoming show because a lot of stuff doesn't come through Fayetteville. And J. Cole snuck in Drake and Jay-Z to the show. It was a surprise thing. So the lineup was already big. It was J. Cole, Big Sean, YG, Jeremiah, all these like really big like hip hop artists. But nobody, like, I mean, for Fayetteville to get something like that is huge. But right towards the end of J. Cole's set, he was like, I got a surprise for you, whatever. And Drake comes out. The energy in that place was insane. Like, it's just such a good energy. And I was like, I was standing there and like, I feel the energy from all this, whatever. And then Drake did his little thing, whatever, went off stage, and J. Cole did another song, and then they start playing one of Jay-Z's songs, and out comes Jay-Z, whatever, and the energy was just out the roof, and it was just good vibes and good energy.
How tall were those guys? Were they tall? Or short guys?
J. Cole was pretty tall. I'm short, so everybody's tall to me.
Gotcha. How tall was Drake?
I just saw him sitting down in a little room in the back. But
oh, okay. And Jay-Z?
They were so far like secluded. Like I just caught a glimpse. Like I didn't.
Because I've been back in that damn hallway. Ain't nowhere to be at the damn green room. Room is small as hell. You just sit there. It's like a damn cafeteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, huh? They probably had a bus or something outside. They probably chilled in or whatever.
Man, They flew them in to Fayetteville Airport, threw them in a Suburban or something like that. Suburban drove into the venue. They got back in the Suburban, went right back to the airport, flew out. I mean, it was a big deal.
Nice. And then you had a story about our agency, ICM, represents this guy, Steve-O. You had a Steve-O story and that kind of a behind-the-scenes type of thing. You kind of tell us about how you didn't know if you were going to be able to take a picture get a picture of him, but you've got the picture done.
Steve-O's story, whatever. I knew he was coming to town, and I took my brother to see the comedy show. He was doing a comedy show where you had to lock your phone up in these little cases so you couldn't record his act. And just my whole determination was like, I got to get a portrait of Steve-O because I've loved him since I was a child. I was like, just an intimate portrait or whatever. And I had emailed his best friend, assistant, whatever. His name is Scott Randolph. And I was like, photographer or whatever, I realize you do videos and stuff too. Would it be possible I can set up like a portrait session with Steve-O never responded or whatever. And right after the show, Steve-O does a meet and greet every time. Met Scott there too and asked him again. He was like, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens or whatever. And it just threw the meet and greet and everybody kind of died down. It never happened. I mean, I was kind of buzzing at the time too. I mean, me and my brother were kind of like partying that night and went back to the car and I sat there and I was like, I'm going to wait till everybody leaves and kind of figure out my way back in, grab the camera or whatever, and walk right past the security. I was standing there. I kind of pretend like I acted like I was supposed to be there and walk up and walk in the room. Steve was there, Scott's there, and his little dog, Wendy, Fountain Prue, was sitting there. And Steve was doing something, and I didn't want to bother him. Hung out for about 5 minutes, and I was like, Steve, and he was like, what's going on? And I was like, do you mind if I shoot a quick portrait of you real quick or whatever?
He had his dog in it, didn't he, or something?
He had a dog in it, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was super cool. And then waking up the next day, and he posted it, and he said, right before I took the photo, this lady said she was dying of cancer or something like that. And the only thing that gets her through that is Steve-O's comedy. And that was his whole timeline. So it was really cool that it had an impact on him on a personal level because of the story that he heard before I took the photo.
So did he give you credit on the photo?
He did, yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Hell, you should have more followers than you got now. Hell, he's got about damn 10 million followers on Instagram, Don.
Yeah, I can't figure this out.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Couple other interesting stories. Was there any, I know you talked about meeting Charlie Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
You did some photos with him, right? Or yep. For him.
I shot one of his meet and greets and kind of the same thing as J. Cole, whatever. I didn't bother him. Didn't talk to him or whatever. Same thing. Turned around, walked away, whatever. And he called me back over and he was like, well, you're the photographer or whatever. Let me sign you one of my photos or whatever. And I was like, cool. And ended up sitting down with him and talking to him for a minute, like a few minutes. And,
yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, you asked me who inspired me as an act. I'm unimpressed, as you can tell, on the Unimpressed podcast. But yeah, that's one guy. When we did this benefit concert in Alabama at this college with Alabama, I think it was their last, their 50-year reunion tour, right? They had, it was Alabama, it was Charlie Daniels, Riley Green, Jamie Johnson.
Nice.
There was a bunch of acts. Then Darren did a set there, and there were a bunch of acts. But when Charlie Daniels, he was in his 80s at the time, it was a couple years ago, and he recently passed away. But I've never seen an 80-year-old guy go off like that. I mean, he was directing court with Alabama on stage, breaking bows,
wow,
and killing it. And I still have the footage, but that was something that very impressed me. I got cold chills. I filmed him with my phone because I never respond that way. But that was a big deal. He was a cool guy. Another thing is when we walked up to him, Charlie, can we get a picture with you? So we took the picture or whatever, and we're like, hey, we'll leave you alone. You know, he's like, I ain't doing nothing. Y'all sit down. And hell, we sat there with him for about 30 or 40 minutes and just chilled and watched a concert together. And great guy.
Super humble.
Those are some cool stories. I wanted to talk about your second passion. I know you touched on it earlier. Mm-hmm. Your second passion of skating.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and what that does for you. Is that an escape? Is that fun? Is that just something you love to do? I know you knew some guys I'd worked with in the past, like Ryan Scheckler and a couple of those guys.
Never met Ryan Scheckler. Yeah, I started skateboarding when I was 13, 14 years old. I'm always stuck with me, whatever. But yeah, it's kind of like a mental escape. It's kind of like a Zen type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the general public, they look at it as like an action sport or whatever. And it's like, for me, it's always been just kind of clear your head. And it's just like a Zen where you're not really thinking about anything.
Now you found a couple places down here in Charleston that you go to.
Yeah.
Where is that at?
A place called Skate Charleston is one of my favorite parks.
Okay, Skate Charleston, and they have one down here under the Ravenel Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all very graffitied up under bridge made by all skateboarders themselves. So they design these concrete ramps or whatever, and it's all decked out in awesome graffiti art.
And what's the name of that one?
So it's called the Bridge Spot.
The Bridge Spot.
Yeah.
The Bridge Spot for skating. So yeah. The Bridge Spot, and the other one in Charleston is?
Skate Charleston.
Skate Charleston.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's good that they have that here for you. So if they didn't have a skate park, it might be a problem. Maybe you couldn't live here. Do they have a skate park in Fayetteville?
They had one. They had the biggest park on the East Coast. That was one of my first jobs when I moved to Fayetteville, whatever. And I just remember it was a real like skating around and bumping into people I'd watched on videos for 5, 10 years or whatever. I remember talking to Catfish the other day, and I was trying to convince him to tell you to build a half pipe in the backyard. But
nice, we could build one over here at this park.
Yeah,
you know that is a designated park. But right beside our house, and there will be no houses built there. Maybe I can get the contractors to do that. Hell, you never know. I mean, it might be a good thing. This would be the Bang Productions community. There's only 8 houses in this community, so it's kind of cool. Well, there's only, what, there's 5 in here now. They got to build 3 more, and then the neighborhood will be finished. What is your be-all, end-all? What's your goals, and, you know, what's your ultimate? You know, what are you, you know, working with us? What do you want to achieve in life?
Question. I mean, just continue to be happy doing what I do and go live day by day, whatever, and go with the flow. And if I really want something, like, I focus all my energy into making it happen. I mean, the Steve-O thing was perfect example. Like, I was determined to get it. I reached out to the resources. Resources told me no. I mean, that happened a long time ago, too, with another story. But, yeah, just staying determined and staying focused.
It's a numbers game, right? If you're a great, and this is for people out there, if you're a great talent, the more doors you knock on, the more will open, you know, and then hopefully you find that right door, you know. Is there anything like professionally you'd want to do yourself creatively? Is there any, like, I know you talked about a short film the other day and you had an idea about that. Is there anything that you'd like to put out there you haven't done yet?
Continue to learn the video aspect, the whole production thing as much as I can. I mean, we talked about this last night. You can never stop learning. I mean, if you have that mentality, then you're just going to – what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point? If you want to be the best of the best, then learn as much as you can. And
well, this is what I was telling you. Is like, I didn't learn how to edit until 2014. And the reason I started editing after I had all this experience in production, been partners with Nick Cassavetes and yeah. – You know, did the Red Bull thing. And I used to get aggravated when we did music videos. It started, I would get aggravated because I had to hire 50 people to do a music video when music videos had decent budgets. I mean, they were decent, $50,000 budget to do a 35 millimeter shoot, you know, back in the day when they shot film. But I would get pissed off because of the time it took people to do things and the quality I was getting back. And I got so pissed off, I taught myself how to do every job on a production.
Yeah.
And editing was one of the last things that I did. And I was late in the game, and I said, you know what? Because I got tired of waiting on editors, because a lot of editors are prima donnas. Mm. And they take for fucking ever to finish anything. And we were doing the food hero Mimi Cosma, and I said, you know what? I'm going to start editing this shit myself.
Yeah.
And it was not great when I started.
How much bad feedback did you get on your first couple of
edits? Oh, all the guys, you know, would kid me. Oh, John's a great editor. Look at this. You know?
You don't want to hear that. I've always loved the bad feedback over the good feedback.
Yeah.
That's always my main thing. If it's bad feedback, then dissect it. I mean, if it makes sense, then okay, yeah, I can improve on it.
The moral to the story is if you want to get something done in life, and you think you can do it yourself, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And you can learn something new every day. You know, and I think because I taught myself how to do all these things, it helped me build Bang where it is today with not a lot of overhead.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have that experience, I could never have got Bang to this point today.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big deal.
Yeah. I think learning yourself too people think it's so hard learning yourself, but there's so many resources out nowadays, YouTube, whatever, there's multiple channels, Creative Live, like. They'll literally teach you anything. They'll teach you anything you want to learn, and just surrounding yourself with people that are more knowledgeable in certain subjects.
But yeah, photography took you on the road with a few artists, and you have a certain style, kind of a certain tone, color, and these artists that you were on the road with have a very similar look and style. Tell us a little bit about some of those artists you went on the road with.
Yeah, well, the backstory about that was, like, the J. Cole thing was eye-opening to me and made it realize this. I can actually do this for a living. And just wanted to shoot as many shows that I could, and I would just continually reach out to artists that I looked up to. And, it was an access way in, since I can't play any instruments. So, and it was also a way to meet these artists on a very personal level where they become friends or whatever. And later down the road, I met a buddy of mine. His name's Johnny. He started tour managing for a bunch of bands, and he brought me along on a couple of different rock tours or whatever. And just being around that environment, it was such a positive environment, and it was like kind of me. It was kind of, it was still surreal in a way, but it was still an experience that I was like kind of just soaking in. The first one we did was a band called Saliva, Puddle of Mud, this other band called Tantric. After that, we did a run with New Year's Day. In this moment, Motionless White, a bunch of rock bands. Through this other venue I used to shoot for, Yellow Wolf toured through. My buddy Johnny was working there at the time. Met his buddy named Edward Crow, was Yellow Wolf's best friend. And Johnny talked me up or whatever, and I ended up meeting Edward, and he took me on a couple of Yellow Wolf shows or whatever. And just being on stage with him and like...
Was not, yeah, you and Yellow Wolf have a similar tone, similar look. I don't say... When I say look, I'm talking about how they present their craft.
Yeah.
Is very, 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 very similar, I would say.
I just respect him a lot because of doing the whole record label thing, whatever, and doing all that. And then starting his old thing, the whole Slamerican crew thing, and people believing it. And he has all these real, genuine, authentic fans that would kill for it. Like, I mean, they
follow him tooth and nail, right?
But that's something he created himself. And his first couple of shows, he was brought on stage. He would have a violin player or whatever, and the crowd would boo him and completely hate him because they just didn't get it. It was something so new, and so, but it was like something he created. And it was a part of him. And
nice, yeah. And there's a little story there how small of a world this is. I met Yellow Wolf in 2016 because Yellow Wolf's mother, right, and Darren Knight, Southern Mama's mother, grew up side by side in, or lived side by side in Southside, Alabama. So Yellow Wolf is an Alabama boy.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably get Yellow Wolf here on this podcast at some point. I know we're going to do his mother's going to do Darren's podcast, and we'll probably get him to do Darren's podcast as well. But he would have to do, before I get him here, he's going to have to do Darren's first because he's Darren's boy, and Yellow Wolf considers him family and so forth. So he's a very nice guy. Well, I think we covered everything. I think we wanted to bring Matt on, talk about photography and have, you know, some, you know, put some information out there in the community about how to be a photographer, knowing a photographer's story, because it is an art, it is a craft. And is there anything you want to close with today, Matt?
I'm just happy to be here and happy you brought me along. And I feel like this is a whole new type of reality where it's just like creativity is endless. Like, let's go.
Yeah, let's do this. And if you're looking for Matt, his address on Instagram is Matthew Wonderly, at Matthew Wonderly. If you want to check him out, check out his photography, check out what he does for us. And he also has information up on the bangproductionstv.com website. My name is John Edmonds Cosma. I'm the CEO of Bang Productions. Thank you for listening and watching the Unimpressed podcast.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.